What have you got for us this morning?
I've been following what's been going on in Cuba, and things have escalated since there was the US-imposed oil blockade on the island in January, which has caused all sorts of difficulties for people on the island. But late on Wednesday, the situation escalated when 10 exiled Cuban men aboard a US-registered boat opened fire on a Cuban on Cuban border guards. In the shootout, four of the men on board were killed and six injured. The Guardian has reported that one of the men who died, Michelle Ortega Casanova, had spoken of wanting to liberate the island. Wilfredo Beira, who's the head of the Cuban Republican Party in Tampa, Florida, which is where the boat was registered, has said that his goal, quote, was to go and fight against a criminal and murderous narco-tyrannical government to see if that would spark the people to rise up. Cuban authorities have said that the survivors were all Cuban residents in the U.S. who now stand accused of intending to, quote, carry out an infiltration for the purposes of terrorism.
Well, yes. I don't know if they've got a leg to stand on, really, do they?
No. Yeah, we'll see what how America replies.
Well, they've denied any involvement, but I think based on Marco Rubio's track record and past statements about Cuba, I'm not sure that they would view it as a great loss that this has happened.
I mean, the man literally wrote in his memoirs that he would liberate Cuba and one day be its president.
But I think,
and he's 40.
It's really important to link it to general kind of escalations of violence in the region, obviously, especially following Maduro's kidnapping at the end of last year. So a situation that seems to be deteriorating and definitely needs to be kept an eye on.
Yeah, well, we see what's happened in Mexico as well with the killing of a cartel boss. It's plunged the country into some pretty dire instability, and it wonders whether that was a American-influenced attack at all, or if America had any part to play in that at all. Perhaps they didn't. Well, certainly time will tell.
Well, you know, if you want to look at the use of media and to create narratives, I guess we can come a little bit closer to home. Green Left Weekly has a report by Sue Ball about the recent Jeffrey Watson report on Queensland inquiry into the CFMEU and misconduct in the construction industry. The name of that inquiry is, it's so much like "When did you stop beating your wife?" It's incredible. But anyway, Sue Bull, she writes in Green Left, "I am a retired construction, forestry, maritime employees union, CFMEU member, and a former union health and safety trainer for nearly 20 years. And I am horrified that Jeffrey Watson's February the 11th report to the ongoing Queensland Commission is being taken seriously. The allegations sound bad, but hard evidence of the union's criminality is missing in his rotting from the top, the CFMEU in Victoria during the Setcat era. It is also clear that what originally began as a union investigation into the CFMEU in Melbourne in July 2024 has now been turned into a propaganda piece for an inquiry in another state. The union's alleged criminality is assumed to be a fact, but is based on very few convictions or even arrests, and rather on hearsay and guilt by association. For instance, mainstream media obsession with allegedly $15 billion worth of corrupt payments connected to the CFMEU is not included in the report, yet continues to be front page news. No one can substantiate what that figure represents, nor whose pockets it supposedly ended up in. In fact, it was quite interesting. There was a report in the same rags around a an event at skullduggery that was at one of the tunnel construction sites that were actually not covered by the CFMEU but covered by the AWU. And it was a scandal which has been under review, which is about a supervisor pressuring female workers for sex and also selling job rights for $5,000, right? So it's under review. But in the paper, it was talking about it, and then it abandoned the data and went straight on to five paragraphs of talking about how bad the CFMEU are, even though the CFMEU don't cover those workers, and it had nothing to do with them. So
very subtle.
Very subtle indeed.
Yeah, absolutely crazy, that stuff, especially in the report that it, for the Queensland CFMEU, it recommended and actually carried out the immediate cessation of the youth crew activities up there, which were accused of being
youthful
criminal activity and like harassing people, and it was all like an unnamed source said that they were harassed and all this stuff. The report's actually pretty terrible.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, really, basically, it's not only news by gossip, but it's news by innuendo. It's pretty freaky. There was some pretty good news coming out of Tasmania to a certain degree. There's been a suspension of salmon farming antibiotic use, which is an interesting development. Mm-hmm. The announcement came off the back of a recent reporting that the antibiotic had contaminated wild fish such as abalone and rock lobster as far as 10 kilometres from the nearest industrial fish pen. The antibiotic is fluorphenicol, and they were using it in Tasmania's factory fish farms. Of course, the sea doesn't have fences. just like the air doesn't maintain a hold around asbestos or nuclear fallout or any of those kind of things. Doesn't matter what you think, you know. Bob Brown Foundation is calling for a complete ban on the dumping of antibiotics en masse by the fish farm corporations and for the factory fish farms to be required to fallow and destock fish farms in times of disease outbreak. It's all pretty grim, really.
Well, we live in a fishbowl, you know. Eventually it comes round.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think that salmon farming is a really great little case study of how politics in Australia works, because the seat that would basically have the oversight to be able to make changes to the governance of the industry is held by Labor, and a majority of the people in the area are employed by the salmon industry. So it would be political suicide for them to actively intervene and regulate the industry more effectively. And I think it's a really great example of how, you know, science can... There can be a consensus scientifically and morally, but if it's politically inconvenient, it becomes almost an impossibility to actually do something about a problem. And I think this is something you see all across the country.
Yeah, and also they inflate this concept of how many people are actually working in these industries. You feel for the people who do work there and get a living out of it. But it takes me back to when I used to live in East Gippsland. There was a public meeting down there of timber workers in one of the small towns as the government was trying to move them towards, taking up other skills in other industries. In this public meeting, they were told quite clearly that they'd have 20 more years of forestry and that there would be no more forests. And they voted to continue to knock down the forest. So your argument's true, but for a handful of people having work and denuding our environment is probably a step too far.
Definitely, and not to mention, I think they've done research. I should, I can't cite the research, so maybe I shouldn't be saying this on air. But they've done research into the kind of most effective ways of transitioning communities away from industries that have, you know, detrimental impacts for whatever reason. And they tend to find that ripping off the band-aid and having quick transitions and reskilling people as quickly as possible is better for communities than dragging these processes out for a really long time to try and hold
and
on
what,
to.
And one of the problems is that people want well-paid, good work. And we're talking, I suppose, traditionally blue-collar work. But when you go, because of the nasty rot that is at the heart of capitalism, even when you do the transfer to, say, creating wind farms, you'll find that the corporations that run them don't want to pay people properly, don't want to give them safe environments, and they are subsidised by government. So really that is the battleground, where workers want good work and safe work, and it's the job of our community to make sure that that is really the priority.
Well said, Annie. But moving back to your previous point about, I think you said gossip as news.
Yeah, gossip as news.
I've got some actual gossip as news that I think we need to talk about.
Dissect.
Yeah. So Politico has reported on Wednesday that senior advisors to President Trump would prefer if Israel attacks Iran to launch a war against the Islamic Republic rather than having the US lead the opening airstrikes. Quote, there's thinking in and around the administration that the politics are a lot better if Israelis go first and alone, and the Iranians retaliate against us and give us more reason to take action, a person familiar with the discussions within the administration told Politico. Despite the negotiations with Iran, the Politico report said that the belief among senior officials is that we are going to bomb them, quote unquote, according to one of the sources, who also acknowledged the risk of major US casualties. So,
yeah, well, there's two things about the Americans. They never fight a fair fight. And two, they speak with forked tongue. It always the same, always the same. Closer, let's go back here to Australia. Did you notice the newly appointed Northern Territory Administrator, His Honour, the Honourable David Connolly, was sworn in as the 24th administrator of the Northern Territory just the other day? They were sworn in by the Governor General, despite negative responses from Indigenous MPs and community. Connolly.
I think you're saying it right. He's definitely a representative of the colony.
Yeah. Formerly the head of, this is what I can't get over, formerly the head of the Cattlemen's Association, has been outed for historic racist and sexist posts on social media during his tenure as an MP, not just as an ordinary bod, but just as a representative. Using the police as a political tool once again outside the Northern Territory Parliament was proclaimed a designated area during the swearing in, so that when demonstrators voiced their anger, police were able to legally stymie dissent and proceeded to arrest an Aboriginal elder for being on his own land. Boom, boom.
Shocking.
Yeah, we'll follow up the NT stuff because there's a lot of moving parts happening now, especially with Inpex, the gas giant, continuing to unfurl its plans with the Beetaloo Basin and a lot of the fracking up there, as we've seen the Texas giant in Western Australia get approved by the EPA for fracking in the Kimberleys.
Isn't that just disgraceful? I mean, in what universe do you frack the Kimberleys? I mean, for God's sake, get a grip, guys. And not even, I mean, it's a moribund technology. It's a poison, and it's in a country that hangs on by the bare fingernails when it comes to water. I mean, in what universe does a practical group of people allow a Texan, an American company, corporation, to come here and to hollow out one of the most beautiful parts of Australia?
Well, as a part two of what Anila was saying as well about what Australian politics looks like, it looks like foreign interest groups lobbying hard the government and getting
anything that they want, every concession
that they'd like in with the Tasmanian industries.
It's a pay-to-play system.
Yeah.
Three multinationals with the fracking. It's five multinationals.
And it's not to mention the strip mining of jarrah trees down the bottom of Western Australia for rare earth minerals, which next week we'll have an excerpt about the mining in Congo and the politics around rare earth mineral mining, because that is actually the reason for why Trump is interested in Greenland because they thought that there was going to be a little problem getting stuff out of the Congo. So if you think that, you know, it's a bit like throwing a pebble into the pond, you know, really, if you want to look at how the world's going in terms of climate action, climate disaster, go to the insurance companies and what they're saying. And if you want to know what's happening in terms of expressions of pure power, just go to what the corporations, the mining companies are trying to do, which leads to this quite interesting thing about the MMG. The MMG is a mining company down who's has been the Bob Brown Foundation has been fighting against them being able to create a tailings dam in the Tarkine, effectively. And they've just recently been, it's been disallowed. They're not allowed to do it at Kimmy's Creek, and they're going to look for another site. But they don't actually need to do the tailings dam there. They have other options which are more sustainable, which is fascinating. It's a Chinese company, and it's owned by the Chinese partially, you know, majority owned by the Chinese government. So it's another one, another wing. Mm. And interesting, when I was looking them up, they describe themselves as all about sustainability. It's a sort of like a massive greenwashing campaign, and the areas that they mine are in rare earth minerals in Congo and Botswana, and there's a major battle going on in Botswana right at this moment by indigenous people to defend their lands against these mining giants. Now, we don't really need to dwell really on nationalities. Nation states are irrelevant when it comes to making large amounts of money by corporations. Australia is an active part in trying to undermine Indigenous people's hold on their lands in South America, for example. None of them are wearing the white hat, I'm telling you. None of them are wearing the white hat.
I do think maybe one difference worth pointing out is between nation states is that depending on which country you're from and how much you're a beneficiary of...
Yeah, I suppose. The outcome, the lucre. The lucre.
But also, depending on, you know, the colour of your skin, whether or not your ancestors were doing the colonising or being colonised...
Yeah, depends on where you're standing, you reckon.
Well, I think it means that you are viewed as more or less disposable and more or less as a resource to be used.
Yeah.
So I think it's your point feels very pertinent that there seems to be across borders this kind of like might is right approach to the wealthiest amongst us.
Yeah.
Pillaging.
They're not our friends.
Also, I think a good way of thinking about it is kind of pillaging what is our most basic kind of common wealth, yes, our shared wealth and environments and culture. But the risks for the people in those communities do change depending on which country you're in and
your
proximity to powerful countries.
No, that's exactly right. I want to finish off our headlines with an interesting little piece that came out of the Yarra Ratepayers. This is very local. When Jeff Kennett, and this is an opinion piece, when Jeff Kennett and Stephen Jolly agree council system is broken and being used as a tool of the state government, you know something is seriously wrong. When the state government uses councils to do its dirty work, the system is broken. Councils shouldn't be treated as cost centres and quiet tax collectors for a cash-strapped state, especially through backdoor hikes like the massive increased fire services levy. As I said, this is from the Yarra ratepayers. Jolly, who's the mayor of Yarra, told The Age that Yarra has identified close to $10.5 million a year in cost shifting, in inverted commas, essential services like libraries and school crossings, once co-funded by state and local government, but now largely bankrolled by ratepayers. After a decade of state-mandated rate capping, Jolly said the business model is untenable. Amalgamation is not my number one. This is not what I want, he said. I want the government to cough up the money. But we can't just keep patching things up. He added that as a trade unionist, he would rather see his own council merged than be forced to become the Maggie Thatcher of Victoria and sack staff.
And it's such a shame because local government can be such a powerful mechanism of creating genuine kind of change and support for communities. But I think that how ineffective they've become.
But not, so not sneaky of the state government.
Yeah, no, very sneaky. But I think it's being reflected in community members' views of their local governments. Like, I think the ABC...
Well, of course, it's up close and personal.
Yeah, the ABC released some figures this week, I think, about people's level of dissatisfaction with local governments, and most, or a majority of people viewed local government as essentially expendable. And I think the other part of the picture...
I don't think they're really understanding how the process works.
No, but I think the other part of the picture is also things like property developers having such a big finger in the pie on local governments, councils and things like that. So I think it's so painful to watch because local governments are such an important part of the picture, but they've kind of been completely... usurped by the people in power.
Is it pessimistic of me to say that almost all of the politics is about developers and mining?
I don't think that's cynical.
Moving right along.
I think that's a reasonable opinion.